does the Christian church have actually at its fingertips scientific evidence that Jesus Christ rose from the dead? Many people believe yes. The answer to that is yes, and it's called the Shroud of Turin. And one man who's done so much to help get the word out related to the Shroud of Turin is David Rolfe, a British filmmaker, R-O-L-F-E. He made the classic film, The Silent Witness. And David, for those not familiar with the Shroud of Turin, you were saying in a previous segment that you have a million-dollar challenge right now on the table for anybody who thinks, oh, this is just some medieval forgery and we could just make a copy of it. And you're saying, okay, great, you do it, you duplicate it, you know, basically along these same lines, and here's your $1 million. WhoCanHeBe.com for more information. But it sounds like it's a much more complicated process than, you know, some would-be muckraker, you know, thinks there is.
Well, the challenge was initially made solely to the organization that presided over the carbon test, which was the British Museum. And they were the ones that branded it a fake. And I'm pleased to say that the backing that I had for this film allowed me to put $1 million in escrow and say to the British Museum, there it is, it's sitting there in a bank account. You said that the Shroud of Turin was faked up by some medieval forger. All you've got to do is show how that image with these characteristics can be created. And that $1 million that's sitting there in escrow is yours. They have failed to claim it. Now, why would an organization like the British Museum, I mean, they could do quite a lot with $1 million. There's all sorts of other treasures that they could acquire to add to their collection. But they have not come forward to try and claim that $1 million, because actually, when anybody with any scientific awareness looks at the characteristics of that image, the length of the cloth, the three-dimensional element of it, everything about it, they realize that nobody could actually replicate it. And the challenge was made to the British Museum. And earlier this year in February, I was invited over to America to an event in Washington, organized by Mara, who's a very energetic supporter of the Shroud. And the challenge was repeated and thrown open to anybody in America who would like to have a go at reproducing the Shroud of Turin. And as far as I'm aware, no one in the States either has come forward to say they'd like to take it up.
Okay, you just mentioned three-dimensional. What does that mean? The image on the Shroud is three-dimensional. If you have a regular photograph or even a painting and you put it through one of these 3D image analyzers, it gets distorted. But with the Shroud, it's three-dimensional. Explain that, please.
Well, a photograph measures light. Now, normally, someone who's taking a portrait takes a lot of care with light, and they'll throw a key light, it's normally called, that gives you the main lighting, and then they supply a bit of soft lighting to sort of take out some of the shadows. If you scan that and turn that information into three-dimensional information, where you've got the key light on the face, that will be picked up much more clearly, and it will draw one side of the face right out, and the darker side of the face will be sunken in. Whereas the Shroud isn't caused by light falling on a subject, it's caused by energy emanating actually from the body that's been wrapped by that cloth. So what you have is an image intensity which is directly proportional to the part of the body that actually is in its relationship to the cloth. So the tip of the nose is darker than the eye socket, and the roundedness of the arms, for example, the top of the arms would be closer to the cloth. That would be darker as the arms fall off. Around that goes softer, and you can then see how that intensity falls off too. So again, the scanning devices that we can use, just using the data on the cloth, can create that image and make it three-dimensional. In the climax, I had the opportunity of, in the climax of the Who Can He Be, the last sequence, where we're actually able, using the latest Hollywood CGI techniques, to make, to allow that figure from lying flat on the bed, of flat of the image, to actually rise up, and then the frontal and the dorsal image of the figure on it comes together to make a single image. And that, in my view, what you're looking at there is the image of Jesus as he was in the tomb.
At the moment of resurrection, there was some sort of burst of radiation. And if it had, you said earlier that if it had been, you know, gone full power or gone longer, it would have burned up Jerusalem or something like that. But one of your guests in one of your films said that that burst of light was so short, it was 40 billionth of a second. 40 billionth of a second. Poof! At the moment of resurrection, poof! And then somehow Jesus' body went right through the cloth.
The cloth went right through the body. It would have fallen through it as a result. And this Paolo Di Lazzaro, Dr. Paolo Di Lazzaro, is head of the Italian Atomic Energy Authority, based in Frascati, just outside of Rome. And he is the scientist who has done the most research and actually been able to simulate it. Using all the power at his disposal, he successfully recreated the same image characteristics, but only over a 2 centimeter square area, to get the same effect on the 14 foot length of the cloth. In recent times, one of the images that most of us can remember is that awful explosion in the Lebanon, Beirut, when that huge factory full of fireworks exploded, and it was captured on film, and you can just get an idea of the power of that knocked out the center of Beirut and for a large distance around. But you're looking at something with that kind of power, but happening in a fraction of a split second.
That's amazing. Plus, there was ultraviolet light or something that helped create this image. And I've heard Father Spritzer or something like that in another film talk about how it would be like lots and lots of floodlights shining just for that fraction of a second, creating that image. It's a mystery.
Yes. Yeah, huge amount of energy. Infinitesimally small amount of time. That's what you're looking at.
Okay, so suppose a medieval forger made the Shroud of Turin. What would he have had to have done to accomplish such a task?
Well, apart from being a genius and having a thorough knowledge of the mechanics of crucifixion. Thankfully, crucifixion had long since stopped, and that's why people had no real idea of where it was, how it was done. And that's why all the classical paintings of crucifixion show the nails in all the wrong anatomical places. But like my guess is that starting with medieval, they might have used a daubing technique. We mustn't forget that you had the Da Vincis of this world. They were very clever people in the Middle Ages, but there's nothing that one can see from that time that suggests an awareness of what would be required to create the image on the shroud.
The blood is there. It's real blood. It's human blood, and I understand it's a rare type of blood, AB positive.
Which is typical of the area from Palestine.
Okay, and the blood comports, as we have pointed out in an earlier segment, with all the major wounds of Jesus. I heard from one scholar one time saying that perhaps there was even a thorn or two that's still stuck in the shroud itself. Do you know if that's true?
That I haven't come across it as far it surviving intact present on the shroud, but you have from the rivulets of blood which are on there, you can see the ghastly seesaw motion that was involved in crucifixion, where the victim had to push down on their feet in order to breathe, and then sag back down again, and that creates the twin rivulets of blood that you can see quite clearly, especially on the wrist wounds.
You have mentioned in previous discussions, Ian Wilson has written some materials that basically provide a credible history for the shroud prior to it showing up in the home of a French crusader in the late 1350s in Liray, France, L-I-R-E-Y. Anyway, one of the things that's so interesting is, as I understand it, in Odessa, where the shroud originally was brought up from Jerusalem by one of the disciples, perhaps it was Thaddeus, also known as Saint Jude, one of the 12, according to tradition, as I understand it. Anyway, bottom line is, the son of Agbar, who was cured of leprosy and embraced Christianity, but his son, that rose up as king afterwards, was a persecutor of Christians, as was the norm back in those days. So some Christians hid it away in a way that was essentially hermetically sealed atop some walls, inside the walls of the city gates of this place of Odessa, and it was not found for about 500 years or so. And then during that time of silence, images of Jesus that we could see in the British Museum or, you know, from the catacombs or whatever, they don't look anything like what we think Jesus looked like once this cloth was found in 525 or thereabouts after a flood in that city. Then all of a sudden, all the images of Jesus, the icons, even coins minted in the Byzantine Empire, have the face of Jesus, and it's based on the shroud. We have about 2 minutes left, so comment on any of these things, if you would.
Well, you've summarized it pretty well. The Constantinople, and that was the seat of great power then, and it was during, I'm pretty certain it was when there was trouble between Edessa and Constantinople and a war that this object was found. But interestingly, where it had been hidden was right above the city gates, which meant that unbeknown to anybody who arrived there, they would be just below the image of Christ. And you must also remember that the belief, the importance of relics in that time, in terms of what they could do to protect a place, was incredibly valuable. They didn't have radar and air-to-air missiles to protect them from enemies. They wanted the strongest possible relics that could possibly be found in order to give them protection. I mean, that's part of the superstitious nature of religion in those days. So it's not surprising that it was over the main gate that, for safety, the Shroud of Turin was hidden.
And while it was hidden, as I say, images of Jesus that looked nothing like what we think of Jesus. Here's the bottom line. What we think Jesus looked like is based on the Shroud of Turin. Earlier, it had a different name, the Mandylion, believed to be a cloth not made by human hands. But we have 20 seconds left. WhoCanHeBe.com. Just tell us again about the $1 million challenge in 20 seconds, please.
Well, I'm still waiting for the British Museum to accept it, but anybody who can replicate the shroud and its characteristics over the 14 feet length of linen. I've got a weaver, an Irish company that's ready to create the same herringbone linen cloth that will be made available to whoever wants to make up the challenge. And all they've got to do is do what the British Museum said some medieval forger did, and they will get $1 million. Bring it on.
WhoCanHeBe.com. David Rolfe, thank you so much. All the best.